Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini, wishing you a very Merry Christmas the day after Christmas and a Happy Kwanzaa. Joining me via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we have three games to talk about, but the Islanders definitely gave everybody some great Christmas gifts by getting 5 out of a possible 6 points last week, finishing in second place overall in the Metro, and generally making themselves look pretty good heading into the sort of unofficial second half of the season. How did the Islanders' victory over Carolina on Saturday affect your Christmas celebration with your family over this weekend?
Yeah, happy holidays. And, you know, we went into this week knowing full well that for all of us, it was these games were going to either make Christmas merry or sour. And that entire Hurricanes game, it was in the balance. Like, there was never a moment there that you thought, okay, like, we can kick our feet up here and relax. That was a wild game. I think it was also pretty typical of what you'd see in that situation. Both teams know full well that there is a holiday break coming on the other side of it. There's very, you know, it's not the effort's there, sure, but it almost felt like a distracted game. It was just like a weird game overall. And the Islanders end up winning it, which I didn't think was going to happen going into the game, for sure. The Hurricane, that arena has been a house of horrors for the Islanders for quite a bit here. And they get out of it. And the second the game ended, it almost felt like a chapter of the season closed. Like the Islanders are now through the first 30 some games. It just felt like it. And maybe it's simple to make that connection because the holidays come, then you get a little break. But I do think when you get a league wide break, when you do get a league wide break, it is a checkpoint, and the Islanders reach a checkpoint in second place in the Metro, 6 points adrift of the Rangers. Not I wouldn't say they're securely in a playoff position by any means, because they're only, you know, they've got like a 3-point cushion on Carolina. But when you look at the picture, big picture overall, like, the Islanders have had the type of season that has required them just to bank as many points and to just get across the finish line with as many points as possible in each game, because of the roster being in such flux. And they've done that. And that made Christmas and having Islander conversations with family members at Christmas quite a joy rather than something to be feared.
Yeah, for sure. My in-laws, who are Devils fans, you know, we were talking about you know, goalies and getting points and seeing where everybody was at, and they were like, "Oh, the Islanders are doing well." I'm like, "Yeah, they're doing okay. You know, they're hanging in there." And I think that's what this whole first half of the season has been about, is sort of hanging in there. And, you know, when you hang in there long enough, you end up in second place in the Metro. It's pretty good. Before we dive into these individual games, reminder that we are on Patreon at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you get ad-free episodes, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, and a whole lot more. There are still a few days left for you to sign up for the Country Club tier, which will then get you an Islanders Anxiety Club patch. So sign up before December 31st, because on January 1st, those patches go away, possibly forever. So sign up today, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Sign up for the Country Club tier with the next week or so, and you'll get yourself a patch when those start shipping. So please do that. And so it was an interesting week. You know, none of these games were really in the bag. They were all very, you know, they had their tense moments, although the Oilers game seemed to be the most secure. But the Caps game, and which was very much in doubt, but on a back-to-back, and then the Hurricanes game again, nothing seemed guaranteed there. But to work out of a three-game week with 5 points, to get 3 points on a back-to-back, these are all huge things that I don't think should be discounted at all. We'll talk about some of the ways in which people are trying to discount the Islanders' success in the second half of this episode. But, you know, all of them, I think, had their moments. They had, you know, resolve, which I think is a big thing about this team. I wish that I think a lot of people too wish that they put a little more structure into their game and a little bit more predictability into their game, but that's just not how this group is going to roll, I guess. But like you said, the effort was there. You can't fault them for, you know, trying to come back, even though sometimes it doesn't always work. But this week, they did a good job. So let's go all the way back to last Tuesday and start with a 3-1 win over the Oilers, which started out about as poorly as it can, with Leon Draisaitl scoring a minute and 23 seconds into the game on the first shot. And you're like, oh, come on, really? It was all Oilers after that. But then the Islanders started to turn it on. You know, they were only really down 1-0 after the first period, which isn't too bad. And then the second period, things started to turn around. Anders Lee, who's been red hot lately, knocks in a loose puck on the rebound. Bo Horvat scores from the slot, which was great. And then on a nice pass from Nelson. And then Holmstrom with another shorthanded goal. This feels like it was happened a week ago or a year ago. It was his fifth shorthanded goal. We'll talk about him too in a little bit. And then they started playing like assholes in the third period again. 16-2 were the shots in favor of the Oilers. But nothing was really all that dangerous. It was just a lot of volume. And their light power play that they got, you'd think would be a chance for them to kind of push things. And they ended up, you know, kind of kicking it back into their own zone, which on the power play is sort of like, what are we doing here? Why are we doing this? So it was a little bit of an irritating game, but a 3-1 win over a team that beat you pretty handily in their building just a couple weeks ago was pretty good. Sorokin looked very good. He had 30 saves. Stuart Skinner had 17 on 20 shots. That was not very good. Set off a new string of angst over in Edmonton. They went from winning with 7 or 8 games in a row to losing 3 or 4 games in a row. And Connor McDavid was held off the score sheet. Somebody left that game with an 11-game point streak, and it wasn't Connor McDavid. It was Bo Horvat. Think about that for a second. And then Julien Gauthier left hurt, but he would come back a couple of games later. All in all, I thought this was a pretty good game. I mean, they hung around. Again, those shots in the third period didn't really seem all that dangerous, although you don't ever like to give up 16 shots. And the funny thing is when they do this sort of thing, people writing for the other team are like, wow, what a gutsy performance. They really tried and they just couldn't put anything together. And I almost feel like pulling them all aside and being like, this is how the Islanders play. Like they just give up tons and tons of shots, particularly in the third period. So your team really isn't all that special, but hey, a 3-1 win is a 3-1 win. They'll take it. And again, coming after that performance in Edmonton a few weeks ago, this was really great. You know, not a perfect game by any means, but what did you think of this one? You know, there's a lot to like. Holmstrom, again, Horvat again. We're going to talk a lot about him in a minute, but there was a lot to not like about this too, including beginning and ending playing like assholes.
I really liked this game. I thought that this one was as good as I could have imagined. I think one thing that we keep needing to calibrate here is that the Islanders are playing, you know, 18 minutes a night with Robert yes. Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc on the ice. And I don't even mean that as like a slight against the team or those players right now. It's just the reality. It's like there's going to be a time where Robert Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc are on the ice against Connor McDavid. And the only thing you can do in these situations is, you know, Robert Bortuzzo isn't going to put Connor McDavid in his pocket next to his keys, right? For a game, he's there to survive and get up the ice and then get the good players out there. And that's basically been the theme of this. Hold on, Elvis just climbed on me. We got a situation.
Oh, no.
He is now on my lap. That's just, you know, the reality of where we're at, and that's been the first 33 games of the season have been that. And I think there is definitely going to come a time this season where we're going to look at it and be like, okay, like we're done with that, like we're done surviving. If we want this team to be a like legitimate rabble rouser in the playoffs and down the stretch, like they're going to need to fix those issues, which are clearly third periods and when the time comes for the other team to make their push, which Barry Trotz was always so stoic about these things. He'd be like, yeah, like we did lose our way a little bit in the second, but there's another team out there, right? Like they get to play, they get to make the push as well, especially if the score dictates that they need to. The problem with this group right now is that those pushes are so exasperated that they're usually, it's not like, oh man, the Islanders just got outshot by the Wild 16-9 in the third period. It's like what you just said, 16-2, or the Islanders don't get a shot for 12 minutes in the third period when they're defending a lead. Because once again, I think it's a personnel thing, right? They just don't have the players needed to do that. Like Ryan Pulock and Adam Pellick would have been perfect for that game, right? Like they would have been a nice, you know, a warm blanket in a third period barrage. The Islanders just don't have them. And I think that this isn't just like Islander fans who are maybe failing to give the team credit for this, but this is a kind of a situation with where the coverage of the team is almost missing it, where they're not getting the credit that for mission accomplished. Like this is a mission accomplished first to get to holiday break with this record and to win that game against the Oilers, who, like you said, were coming in desperate for a win. They had the new coach bounce. Then they're doing this little three-game New York trip, all three games on ESPN. It was pretty much set up for the Oilers to be a showpiece for the NHL, these three games. And the Islanders, I think, played about as well as they could have. with the situation being what it is, with the fact that this team is still going to, they have a bottom six. Like you look at that bottom six as an outsider and you're like, okay, who's missing here? Like who are the Islanders missing on their forward group? Cause it's some guy named Simon Holmstrom. I think I've heard of him now with JG Pageot. And I know that everyone thinks he's bad now. And Julien Gauthier is on the Islanders now. That's weird. And then there's something called Hudson Fashing playing with Cal Clutterbuck and Casey Cizikas. Like, those outsiders will think, okay, like the Oilers should be able to contend with this team. And like, I thought the Islanders skated with them outside of the first 4 minutes. Like that, you saw the Islanders get to their game, which another Barry Trotzism, like they found it and it was almost tangible. You could just see them coming into getting their legs under them and stuff. I thought there was just so much to like about that game, from the performances from the top line, the power play. Dobson and Romanov were really good. I think everybody kind of did what they had to do for the Islanders to get out of there with a very important 2 points, knowing that once again they had to travel on a back-to-back in Washington. And the coverage of the game, I know we talk a lot about ESPN, so it might get a little tired, but I do need to just mention a couple things that, holy cow. It's so frustrating to watch these games, and it bears repeating because there's one part where I really want to watch, and that's Ray Ferraro. I love listening to Ray Ferraro. He's so good. Him and Thomas Hickey, I think, have so much in common as analysts, and we love them both to death. The problem is Ferraro comes with a sideshow side piece. Like the John Buccigross experience is so irritating. There was a part of the game where the Islanders had an offensive zone faceoff, and they did the thing where they show Ferraro in his Islander jersey and his Whalers jersey. For some reason, they were showing him in a Whalers jersey as well.
they showed that when the Islanders played the Hurricanes on ESPN.
Yeah, and it was the same pictures. It was the same pictures and the same conversation. And except this time without Steve Levy, it was John Buccigross talking about it. And since it was Buccigross, he had to throw in 18 different hockey buzzwords from 6 years ago. And the play started because they were still doing it, and the Islanders got a shot from in the slot. And instead of saying doing what the professional broadcasters like Brendan Burke or Alan Furing would do, and side putting this Hartford Whalers conversation on the side burner, whoever took the shot, instead of saying and there's a shot by Horvat saved by Stuart Skinner, he just goes Hartford Whalers. Like he was caught off guard by the shot, so he screamed the words Hartford Whalers out. So that was tough to deal with. I will say though, at the end, they had an interview with Anders Lee, and
Yeah,
they talked about how many kids the team has, and he's like, I think there's like 35 kids that the Islanders have as a roster together. So they have 35 children on this roster, and that kind of just it really put into perspective what we always talk about with this team, which is, you know, we call these guys the uncles for a reason. It's because Kyle Palmieri's kids call Anders Lee Uncle Anders, and you know, Adam Pellick is Uncle Adam to Brock Nelson's kids, because they've been around each other for so long now, and they and that, I think that ethos is starting to like show through in more of a positive way, where it was painted as a negative way earlier going into the season. Like, everyone's like, oh, this team is needs to be refreshed, it's the same group of players over and over again. And now I think people on the outside are starting to say, this is actually kind of a cool story. Like, they're starting to pick up on it. And you know, what a week for the uncles. You know, Christmas week, three games in what is it, 3 and 4 nights, or 6 and 9 heading into Christmas. But yeah, getting those 2 points from the Oilers to kind of put a bow on it, no matter how they were going to do it, I was going to be happy with it. So I thought a pretty stirring performance.
I thought it was okay. I didn't come away thinking, oh my God, this is a disaster. As far as Buchogras goes, I'm pretty sure I turned the sound down to 2 on my computer after that Draisaitl goal, because it was, whatever call he made was so annoying that I couldn't take it, which meant I missed out on Ferraro too. But I did notice the picture, because I'm like, wait, that's the same picture they showed the other day during the Hurricanes game. So, but yeah, it's just awful. But I was excited, because the thing was, I wanted to hear Ferraro's take on UBS Arena. And at one point he did say that, and I could kind of hear it, because it was in between sets or whatever, that he was like, this is the best between the benches setup in the entire league. He's got his own like exit and entrance. They have like a place to sit or whatever. I think they might have had some like cooler or something there for him. Like, it was nice. He was very impressed. So I'm glad he liked it. Hopefully he comes back a lot. But yeah, no thanks on the Buchogras experience. It's just the worst. Hopefully we don't have too many more of those. But yeah, no, I thought the game was good. And I'm glad you brought up Dobson. I should have mentioned him before. And Art Staple wrote about this, I think this week after this game, was that, you know, usually McDavid gets the Pellick assignment, or Adam Pellick gets the McDavid assignment. They're former teammates and they know each other very well. And Pellick is obviously usually up to the task of shutting McDavid down, but no Pellick this time. And by default, it ends up being Noah Dobson, and he played well. Again, McDavid left with no points. Like, you're not going to get any better than that. He looked dangerous at times, but he walked out with no points, and it's just a very Islanders thing to give up a goal, you know, less than 2 minutes into the game, and all of a sudden that's the only goal that the team leaves with. So, good performance, and again, you know, more I think more sort of gumption and more resolve than you know, structure, but it worked. But the flip side of that is that it was a back-to-back. And they had to play Washington the next night in Washington, and this time not on ESPN, but on TNT. And so it was a whole other set of broadcasters we don't like. I guess we'll get to talk about him in a second. But I was actually out for this game. I did not watch it. I was seeing Black Panther in concert at the New York Philharmonic. It was awesome. If you get a chance to go see it, check it out. It's great. They play the movie, and then the Philharmonic plays. So I've never seen the Philharmonic before. Now I can say I have. And I saw it with Black Panther, so it was great. And I was, you know, nervous for this. It's a back-to-back. The Islanders have not been good on back-to-backs this year. But Semyon Varlamov was good really early. And they got, Caps got an early goal from Max LaPierre. I think his name is Max, right? Hudson Fashing tied it with a wraparound goal. That's an interesting one from him. But then it was all Caps. Joel Edmondson scored from back near the blue line. And you thought, all right, that's going to be it. But Anders Lee, again, jumps on a loose puck, ties it with a dangle. It was really nice. Nice goal for him. Tied it. They went to overtime, and they lost there on a Dylan Strom shot. Dobson had taken a penalty, which I still have not seen. But again, if you get 3 points on a back-to-back, you're doing the right thing. So frankly, once they got to overtime, I didn't care what happened. If they had walked out with that second point, that's fine. But to get 3 is great, and especially when you clearly didn't have it. And again, props to Semyon Varlamov for doing that. For basically just keeping the Islanders in there, and then Anders Lee for tying the game. It worked out pretty well. So not a lot to say about this. Anytime you take 3 points, I didn't see a lot of complaining about the game, which again is probably the right attitude. 3 points on a back-to-back, you take it every single time. and you walk away and you're like, thank you. That works. You watched this one and we were joking. I had put this out on Twitter. We were joking. I checked in at intermission. They were down 2-1 going into the third. And I was like, I kind of figured that. And you thought it was going to be a 4-1 loss. But I'm like, I don't know. I'm kind of feeling 3-2 overtime loss. And I was right. So the one time I was right in this case. But you watched it. I mean, what was your takeaway from it? From what I understood, it was basically the Varley show. And then Lee tied it. And then they just the penalty was not good, apparently, or just kind of a stupid penalty. And then from that point on, it was academic. And Strom just scored. But again, I'm happy with the 3 points. But what did you think of it?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Like you were. Thank God you were right, because this was a game that just screamed, do anything you can to get a point. And I think that it works well with this Edmonton game as well, which was, you look at these two games almost as one commodity, and you think to yourself, all right, got to get 3 out of 4 out of this back-to-back. It's tough. The Capitals were well-rested. This was the second set of back-to-back games for the Islanders in less than a week. They had just did the old Friday night on Long Island, Saturday night in Montreal. After, you know, that crazy game against the Bruins, and they fly to Montreal.
Right. And the Habs have been off for like 4 days before that.
Right. Like, and then the Capitals were off for 3 days before this one. Mm. So if really tough schedule spot after a pretty rousing win against the Oilers. And you knew, I could have scripted the first 30 minutes of this game for you. I know exactly, like, the Islanders will just do everything they can to hang around. A couple of the guys will clearly not be at their best. Pucks will be bouncing all over the place, missed passes, that kind of stuff. But Varley was once again great. And I want to park the goaltending conversation for the game against the Hurricanes. But it just showed like how important he is to this team, because he kept them in it until the team could show up physically, and they did eventually. And that goal from Anders Lee, what a seminal moment of the season that was! Like,
yeah, seriously,
this guy, and we were part of the chorus. We were like, God, if Lee's done, if he's toast here, that's a big problem for this team, a big problem. And credit to the coaching staff for making the move to go back to Lee, Horvat, and Barzal, which they did do, you know, out of the start of the season. It's not like they never tried it. Like, this was a line that wasn't working all that well through the first couple weeks of the season. Then they separated them, and Barzal and Horvat started to click. And I think the general idea behind it was, look, we were getting the worst version of Anders Lee we've seen as an Islander in all likelihood.
Right.
It's unlikely he's going to be that bad. So let's do it. Let's put him back up there. If he can find his game, like, this could be a great first line. And it has been. Like, everything, it's not just the goals and that are showing that this is a legitimate first line for a good hockey team. It's the underlying numbers are good. Everything looks good for the top six now, because you have the very stable, productive trio of Nelson, Engvall, and Palmieri behind them. But Lee's turnaround, what a story it's been. Because, you know, even when we were getting frustrated with his play and, you know, having this like almost existential question about, you know, Anders Lee, Islander captain, bleeds his heart out, orange and blue, but his game just might not be up to snuff anymore. Like, it was a heavy, heavy question to kind of sift through. We always put the caveat in that those conversations, which we're rooting for this guy. We love this guy. Like, yeah. He's the best.
We
don't want, and that's the, and I think that's true of everybody on the island. Like, everybody's rooting for Anders Lee. It's nobody's mad that the Islanders signed him to that big whopping extension in the summer, you know, 5 years ago, because we all knew the context of that extension. And at the time, he was potting 40 goals every once in a while. So there was there was this whole kind of groundswell, I think, of emotion from a lot of fans when he scored that goal. Like, wow, like he might have just made us all look like idiots. And that is awesome. Like, everybody, it was almost I think in this age of the fan analyst, everybody just wants to be right about every single player, about every single game, about every single team, about every single season. But for the Islander fans, I think everybody was convinced that that Lee's season or his career was definitely on the down, at the bottom of the mountain here, on its way down. And nobody was gloating about, like, I told you about Anders Lee. It was like, I really hope I'm wrong. And I've never been happier to be wrong about that, because that was a great moment. Gets the Islanders a point. And yeah, you get out of that. You get out of DC with that point in your pocket, 3 out of 4. And I think when you put those two games together, the Islanders played it almost exactly as they had to accomplish that goal. Because once again, like, as mediocre as the Capitals roster is, with the Islanders on a second night of a back-to-back traveling, Washington waiting for them, and the Islanders once again needing to rely on heavy minutes from certain, you know, Mike Riley and Sebastian Aho on his offside and Robert Fortune. That's 4/6 of their defense, if you want to include, since Aho is playing on his offside, right? So he's kind of a different defenseman at the moment, playing a different role. 2/3 of their defense is just not, it's not what the ideal, they're not in their ideal role.
Right.
Two players were playing for different teams at the last holiday. like this is a team that is just getting across the line. And they did it. And even, you know, you can even throw Romanov and Dobson in there, because they're being asked to play 28 minutes a night. Like, and then by the way, you got to do it again. And we're traveling tonight. Like, you got to do it again tomorrow. You got to travel tonight. Get yourself ready to play 30 more minutes. And we need a point out of this game any way you can. And I think that you saw it at the end of that game. Like, Dobson looked just spent. Like, when he took that tripping penalty, he was a little ticked off at the call. I think it's one that if it was John Carlson doing it to Pierre Engvall, I would have wanted the call. So I don't think it was a terribly, like, egregious call. But his face after he took that penalty was just like, I'm so tired. And I was like, I feel for you, man. Like, this is crazy to watch. But considering the Islanders needed him and Romanov to play those heavy minutes, they needed effective minutes out of Bolduc and Bortuzzo, Riley and Aho, who, I mean, Mike Riley was brought into this team to replace Sebastian Aho when he got hurt, you know. You know, when you think about it, and now he's playing with Sebastian Aho. Like, when you put all this stuff together, getting 3 out of 4 in those games, really, like, that's mission accomplished.
And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more, featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of 2 items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly.
We'll talk about Riley again in a second, because he has really, 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 really stepped up and helped this team a lot. But yeah, I mean, Dobson is playing 30 minutes. You know, it actually gets back to something you were talking about a few minutes ago, and I wanted to talk about this. Like, I definitely do think that it's easy, because I'm just as guilty of this as anybody, of like forgetting, oh, right, they don't have Pellick and they don't have Pullick, and they don't have Mayfield, who, you know, we've argued that maybe Mayfield hasn't been at his best this season, but he's still Scott Mayfield. He's still a guy who, you know, who's done great things for this team. And we look forward to, we look to him to be one of the leaders and do, you know, continue to play well for the Islanders game in and game out. Those guys aren't here. And so we are relying on two guys who just showed up a couple of weeks ago. One guy who, you know, has one of the strangest Islanders career arcs we've ever seen. And then another pair, their top pair are two guys who last year didn't work. Remember when when it was like, oh yeah, they'll put Dobson and Romanov together, and it's like, oh, these guys, this ain't gonna work at all. And then, you know, they finally straightened it out over the course.
It was like they like almost looked like they were actively sabotaging one another, because Dobson was, you know, checking his text messages, and Romanov was trying to plaster people through the boards at every chance he got. And you look up and you're like, okay, well, Romanov's in the third row because he just put David Pastrnak on someone's lap, and Dobson's over there posting an Instagram in front of the goal. Like, this is in a. Yeah. And then now, like, the two of them are just buttoned up. Like, they're so buttoned up all of a sudden. It's incredible.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. It's great. That's our number one defensive pair now. And they're good. Like, they do the job. Awesome. So it's really funny. But I think that there is this, maybe it's just us. I don't know. Maybe we're kind of used to it. But, like, there is definitely been, I don't think it's a conscious thing, but there has been a minimization of that idea that these guys are in second place in the Metro and they are banking points quite a bit, despite not having three of their top six D in there. And again, you know, filling in the gaps with two, you know, a minor trade, a waiver pickup, and some guys who just kind of showed up, and Sam Bolduc, who again, we wanted him to swim back to Bridgeport earlier this season. And he's turned out to be okay lately. I mean, he's sort of not being as grievously terrible as he was before.
You know? It, you know, those scenes in like, maybe in like Rudy or one of those college football movies where they're like, Remember the Titans, and they're talking, and the coach Boone is talking to the offensive lineman character, and he's just like, I just need you to pass, like, we're gonna get you a C+, like, all we need out of you is a C+, and you can go to college or you can play football or whatever. For Sam Bolduc, that's what it is. We're just like, if you can give us a C, if you can just pass this class, if you can pass AP physics, guess what, man, like, that's all you need. That's it. You just need to come in here and get a C. You know, we'll take a C-.
Right.
That's all you got to do. And guess what? He's doing that. He's playing some beautiful C- hockey right now.
Yep. Well, this I mean, if you want to bring it back to the Islanders, this is how the Islanders beat the Penguins in 93, whereas Al Arbor was like, can you tie Mario Lemieux on a shift? You don't have to beat him on the shift. You just have to tie him. And everybody was like, yeah. And they went around the room. That's all you got to do. You just got to get a tie. Just get a tie and get off the ice, you know, let the other guy come on and get a tie. So, but you know, this is how we are. Like, they're just going out, getting these points, doing the stuff. We're focused on the guys who are here doing the job, like Andersley, like Horvat and Barzal, who've been brilliant lately. Like Hudson Fashing, who's come on lately, which is nice to see as well. Obviously Simon Holmstrom, again, we talked about him a minute ago. He's got five shorthanded goals, and like their penalty kill isn't great, but Simon Holmstrom has been fantastic. So, you know, if we were a different market and there was different people covering the Islanders, maybe you would hear more and more about what a gutsy performance it is to not have these three guys and to still do this. But here it's like, nope, they're gone. So these are the guys that are here right now. And for them to be doing what they're doing with those guys is really impressive. And no more so impressive than on our final game, which was the 5-4 win in Carolina, a game where, I'll be blunt, I thought the Islanders actually played pretty well in this game. The Hurricanes, we know how they play by now. It's the worst. They're just constantly shooting from everywhere. And, of course, shots on goal at the end were 41-28 in favor of the Hurricanes. But, like, I don't think a ton of those shots were really all that dangerous. We'll talk about the end of the third period in a second. But, you know, it was just volume. I didn't really think that much in it. And 41 shots wasn't nearly as bad as that one game where they had, you know, 100 attempts to the Islanders, like 25 or whatever it was in the game. That was pretty bad. But I thought in this case, this game was about even for the most part. The Islanders were up, I believe, what were they? So the Islanders, Sebastian Aho scores on a rebound after no call on a trip back at the other end. We're going to talk about Hurricanes fans and referees in a second, Rod Brindamore in a second. The Hurricanes tied it. Taro Teravainen jammed one past Sorokin. But then Nelson, right off a faceoff in the slot with a beautiful shot. And then Horvat kind of didn't get all of it, but he got enough of it to get it past Pyotr Kochetkov on a nice cross ice pass from Barzal. So they were up 3-1. Riley scores, or Aho, Carolina's Aho scores on the power play, but then Riley gets it right back to get the 2-goal lead again. They start out with a goal in the third. Slavin, who always scores seemingly against the Islanders, made it 5-4, I think, at that point. No, sorry, he made it 4-3. And then Lee scores from Dobson. Another beautiful shot. Kochetkov kind of just not didn't get quite all of it with his skate. And so then Stefan Nason scores on the power play from Romana. Well, he scored on the power play, but like the puck bounced off of Romanov's shin and right to him, and he scored that way. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. You know, kind of a dumb luck play, but needless to say, that made it 5-4, and then things started getting really hairy. Martin Natchez had a goal call back, and even he knew he kicked it in, and he was shaking his head to his teammates like, "Nah, that's not gonna count. I kicked it." And the last minute was pretty hairy, but Sorokin was fantastic. He made 36 saves. Kochetkov was not good, but he made 23. Again, some of those shots could have been stopped, but again, much like the back-to-back, to walk out of Carolina with a 5-4 regulation win, and again, what I thought was a pretty evenly played game between these two teams, I thought was fantastic, and I was glowing afterwards. Felt really, really, really great. We talked a little bit about this, but what was your feeling on this? Am I crazy, or was that about an even, especially for the Hurricane? These two teams play very, very different styles of hockey.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a little bit weird, but I thought they were about even.
And once again, the context is so important in sports and everything. Like, the Islanders are going into Carolina.
Right.
They are going in with the same, I'm going to beat this point to death. They're going in with Robert Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc and Mike Riley and Sebastian Aho playing 2/3 of the game on defense, right?
Right.
Like, they're not going to go there and just completely, you're not going to walk away from Carolina and look at the money puck deserve to win a meter and be like 92% Islanders when you're going into a place like that. Like, it's just not going to happen. The way the Islanders win this game is they get better goaltending and they just hang around and they're clinical. And they were all those things. Like, the game, and Cal Clutterbuck said it in his post-game interview. He's just like, I just don't think people understand what these guys – like how different it is to play this team compared to everyone else. They just throw everything at the net. They try to cause as much chaos on the ice as possible and take advantage of it. And you just have to be ready for it. And the Islanders were. Sorokin was good. Kochetkov was not. The Islanders were, when they got their opportunities, they took advantage of them. And I think that this game was such a good kind of show me why you believe in the Islanders game. And I would show them this game, be like, well, because they played this team, which everybody thought, which was the consensus Stanley Cup favorite by betting odds. You know what? They weren't a runaway favorite by any means, but they were the favorite, the betting favorite on opening night. They went into this building with a banged up roster. They won, and they did it in the exact way that they needed to do. Like, they're not here to win style points. Like, they're these guys are all going home to their 35 kids, and they're going to wrap Christmas presents for the next 24 hours. They need to win this game, and they need to get home and put gifts under the tree.
Put bikes together,
stuff. This is very, like, all this context is kind of important here. Yeah. And so is the context of what we just mentioned with the goaltending, which is the Islanders are getting, they're getting very little credit for what they're doing and how this team is built and that it's not sustainable. Well, guess what? It is sustainable because they have two really, really, really good goalies. And so many teams in the NHL, we can go through the list right now of teams that would kill their fourth line left wing to get one of the Islanders goalies, right? To get Semyon Varlamov, they would do some unholy things to get that man onto their roster. Like, we could go through it. Leafs. Red Wings, Sabres, Senators.
Yeah, seriously.
Hurricanes, Devils, Blue Jackets. And that's just the Eastern Conference, right? We then go into the West. It's the same thing, right? The Flames are having goaltending issues. The Kraken, Oilers. Yeah. it's all across the board. And I have this like sneaky suspicion that part of the reason that Lou signed Varlamov to that extension when he did and never traded away was part of being a general manager isn't just making your team better, but it's making your rival's job harder.
Yeah.
And maybe he identified like, the Devils don't have any goaltending. Why would I let Semyon Varlamov go to the open market?
Right.
Why would I let him get tempted with a deal where the Devils would absolutely overpay or the Hurricanes, our division rivals, would overpay for him to come there and stabilize their goaltending? If the Hurricanes had Semyon Varlamov on their team, they're probably where the Rangers are right now. If the right. Devils had them, they're probably close to where the Rangers are right now, but they don't have them. That's what makes this, like, the Islanders are not just a team with some serious offensive punch right now, but they're the team with perhaps the most enviable goaltending situation in the entire league.
Oh, like
the
question.
Entire league.
Yeah.
Like, why? Everyone can, you know, talk about they're in the red and gold difference. They're winning. They're getting loser points. They're doing this. Well, okay. Like, I don't care, because the way that their roster is constructed, like, they're not going away. Like, they're just going to be here. They're going to be here, and they're going to be around, and they're going to be annoying. Because that they have these two guys that are going to, on most nights, outplay the other ones.
Yeah.
If that game continued until the Hurricanes, like if hockey was win by two, whatever team, you know, wins by two at the end of the game, the Hurricanes needed to get up two on the Islanders or something, we would have been there all night. The Hurricanes were, the Islanders were going to score one out of like every seven or eight shots against the Hurricanes goalie.
Yeah.
The Hurricanes are going to score one out of 15 on Sorokin or whatever it ended up being, because that's just what these goaltending situations are. And we've become so much like almost too smart and too like up our own asses as hockey fans to not just see the simplest thing here, which is really, really good goaltending is so important. And it's even more important with the way the league is situated right now, which is there are 32 teams in the NHL, and I would say six of them have goaltending situations where on whatever goalie is in for them, they're in good hands. Like they're not, David Riddick isn't walking through the door to play a game for the Islanders. You know, we're not crossing our fingers and hoping that Ivan Provorov can click or Martin Jones is fine.
I was going to say that the Bruins, obviously with Swayman and Ullmark, are very good as well.
Right.
The Rangers are getting an insane performance out of Jonathan Quick this year, which, if he turned into a pumpkin tomorrow, I don't think anybody would be surprised, right? Like, good on him. He's had a good first half of the season, but this can't possibly continue that long, can it? I mean,
no, I would suggest not. And like how often did we hear throughout the first couple months, like, oh, Steve Yzerman doesn't want to give up one of his three goalies.
Yeah.
And now they're hurt. Like now he's got four because Michael Hutchinson is playing goalie for the Red Wings. Like this.
Right.
This, it cannot be overstated, and this win over the Hurricanes is like the perfect example of it.
Yeah.
Look, why did the Islanders win this game? They won this game because they had a good goaltender, and the Hurricanes did not. Like, it's that simple, and that's a bona fide, real, we're in reality way to win hockey games is to win because you have the better goalies. Dominic Hasek, Marty Brodeur, you know, Patrick Waugh, these guys won games and were on good teams more often than not because they're really good goalies. Like, that's why, like, you don't, how many like awesome goalies in the past, since, you know, the in the quote unquote modern NHL have been on bad teams. They were just like, man, it's a shame that this team is wasting this goalie season. It's very rare, because if you have a good goalie, you're going to be good. Like, because keeping the puck out of your net is incredibly important in hockey, believe it or not. It's not just about, you know, just winning a game on the deserve to win meter. It's just about getting more saves than the other team. And the Islanders did that to the Stanley Cup favorites the other night, and it counted. I woke up the next morning and I checked the standings, and I said, oh, wow, weird. The NHL decided to award the Islanders those 2 points because they got better goaltending than the Hurricanes. How about that?
Many of the writers, and we'll talk about this again in the second half, have decided that if you win because you have good goaltending, you have cheated. You have not played the game correctly because their models cannot account for it. So therefore, it's not legitimate. And I would have loved to have seen these people cover this league when Dominic Hasek was doing his thing, because let's be blunt, the Sabres did not have a lot of good teams back then. You know, they had the one team that went to the finals. But their best player for 10 years was their goaltender, and he was the best. And we saw, if you saw him live, you knew this guy was going to stop everything any way he could. You couldn't, there was no playbook for Dominic Hasek. He was great, and everybody loved him. He had a fun nickname. He had a fun personality. He had a cool, the cool black and red jersey for a while there. Like, people loved it. But, you know, if he was playing today, the Sabres would be run out of town on 26 rails because they did not play in a way that was conducive to writers of The Athletic. Real quick, another quick rant I want to go on before we catch a break here. So I mentioned a no tripping, a no call on a trip at the Carolina Hurricanes game. And there was something weird going on in this game. And maybe I'm paranoid and you guys can tell me if I'm being kind of ridiculous or not. But like, I feel like Rod Brind'Amour has trained these Hurricanes fans well, in the sense that every time a Hurricane, Rod loves to complain to the refs. He's constantly crying. He's constantly arguing with them. And every time a Hurricanes player is touched in any way, shape, or form in PNC Arena, the fans want a call. They want a call. Ah, we got to. And of course, when it's not called, they start getting very mad. Any call against a Hurricane is immediately considered to be like a felony offense on the referee. How could you do that? Why didn't you call X, Y, and Z on them before? Why are you calling us? Blah, blah, blah. And they start yelling and screaming. I felt a real tension in this game starting from the first period, that no call, null tripping call. And it just continued throughout the entire thing. And I felt this way during the playoffs last year. I felt this way during other Hurricanes Islanders games. Am I crazy, or does it feel as if referees are afraid to call penalties against the Hurricanes in their home arena? Because if they call the penalty, people are going to be yelling at them for calling a penalty. And if they call a penalty against the other team, it's going to be like, the other team's going to feel like, well, they're just calling a penalty against us because these people are yelling at them and yelling, you know, bullying them into giving us penalties. Like, am I crazy, or does it feel that way?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I thought I had the same feeling throughout this entire game, which is part of the reason I hate playing this team.
It's, I know,
like, it becomes this weird.
Yeah.
I don't even, it's.
And it works for both teams, by the way, because like they were both like people were falling and like there was cross checks happening all the time in this game. Nothing was getting called. And after about the halfway through the second period, I'm like, there's no way a penalty is going to get called in this game. No, zero. Because it's just these refs don't want to do it. They don't want the aggravation.
I think that Mike Riley trip too. Hmm. Was like, okay, it's a penalty. They missed the call. The Islanders end up scoring. It happens. It just got to the point where every little thing that a bad bounce for the Hurricanes just ended up getting booed. And
right.
Well, it felt very us against the world with the Hurricanes, which is their whole ethos, which makes no sense because this is everyone's pet team. Like it's been everyone's pet team for so long.
Right.
And Brind'Amour gets so much credit as a head coach, and hell, like he's done a good job. He's had this team. He's had this team, cooking on all cylinders for years now. But it gets to the point where you're just like, okay, the shtick is up. Find a new shtick, because this game also was kind of hard to listen to on the broadcast because it was Brandon Burke was alone.
Mm. Oh yeah.
And it was kind of strange, and he almost sounded like he was calling like a Thanksgiving Macy's parade or something, because he just didn't stop talking, and he's like, okay, and here come I fully understand it's probably hard to call a hockey. I know it's hard to call. We know from our previous discussion on this episode with John Buchikras that there are very few people on this planet that can call do play by play for a hockey game, and doing it alone becomes even that much harder. But it just sounded very, very weird. A very World War II documentary watch, like narratory.
Yeah.
From Brendan. And I almost put it on mute. And I had a friend text me too. He's like, this is really weird, right? And I was like, the whole thing sounds very morose. And they had like Matt Molson and Shannon Hogan step in for a bit. And those didn't really work out well. It sounded like Shannon was like talking about how she was rooting for the Hurricanes for some reason. It was, and there were times where you just were waiting for Butch to pipe in. And one of those moments was the Riley trip. And so they end up scoring. And I would be pissed off too if I was on the other end on that. But it doesn't define me as a fan. Like thinking that the refs have it against us. What defines me as a fan is knowing that the greater hockey media has it against us as a fan. That's me, not the refs. But I don't like, I can't sit through a hockey game and just be pissed off about a non-call on a trip, because it happens. And guess what? There's going to be a play in either this game or the next game where Jordan Martinook or Jacob Slavin do something stupid and they don't get called. And you're like, oh, we got away with one. It just happens. It evens out more often than not. And you just got to move on. And yeah. It's so – these camera – I think, you know, they got to do it, I guess, at this point. But every game against the Hurricanes, it's almost like Kyle Dubas when he was with Toronto. Like half the game is spent watching the hockey game. And then in between every whistle, you just get a shot of Rod Brind'Amour.
Yeah.
No matter what happens.
Right.
Like I don't need to see Rod Brind'Amour seething on the bench because like they missed a call or – well, look, the Hurricanes are going on a power play now. Let's pan over to Rod Brind'Amour to see what he's doing. It doesn't like I don't need. It's just not fun anymore to watch these games.
I hate watching games against the Hurricanes.
Yeah,
just between their style, the fans, the way they're treated, Brind'Amour, I hate them. I really do.
So and I do radio before every time the Islanders for the Hurricane. I do radio with this guy Adam Gold, and he's great. And we kind of talked about. In all these games, before all these games, we talk about like, hey, where are the Islanders at? Teach me, kind of like, I don't watch the Islanders. I watch the Hurricanes. Can you explain how he was like, they have the worst penalty kill in the league, but a good power play now. I'm like, yeah. And that worst power play has this guy who's scoring, you know, shorthanded goals at a ridiculous clip. And, he was someone who fully admitted after that series against the Hurricanes last year that like the Hurricanes got away with it. Like they got away with that series win, that they got the better whistle. It happens. And then a regular season game in December turns into this absolute witch hunt to the point where the game just stopped making sense after a while. And
yeah,
the Islanders get out of there with a huge win. Like that was a massive 2 points because you put at least two games between you and the Hurricanes. You have a game in hand on them. Like this, you leave this game, you gave your head a shake because you're like, what the hell did I just watch?
That was
very weird. None of the goals made sense really, and either team. And then you look at the standings, you say, wow, the Hurricanes are in fifth place, the Devils are in sixth place, and the Penguins are in seventh place. And look at the gap between the Islanders and these teams. Like, how on earth did we get here? And you just get a huge smile on your face because. Like this team is just doing what it needs to do. And that's what they did against the Hurricanes. But and the Hurricanes couldn't cope with it.
Yeah, pretty much. Because they most definitely did not do what they needed to do. So that's a good place to stop right now. We're going to come back. We're going to take a break. And we are going to look ahead at the games that are coming up, which represent even more chances for the Islanders to make even more hay and separate themselves from the rest of the Metro a little bit. And then we're going to talk about loser points. Oh, everybody's favorite topic. All right. So come back and meet us on the other side. Thanks. So the Islanders have three games coming up on this week before New Year's Eve, one of them on New Year's Eve, and they're against two teams. They have the Penguins on the 27th, or maybe the day you're listening to this. They have the Capitals on the 29th, and then they have the Penguins again on the 31st, New Year's Eve. That game starts at 6, by the way, so be ready for that. That one's in Pittsburgh, by the way, and the other one on the 27th is at UBS Arena. These are going to be monumental games. So obviously they're all in the division. The Islanders just beat the Caps the other day played the Caps on the back-to-back and lost in overtime. So, seeing them again would be a great chance to, you know, get some points from there. They are, at home for the this time. So that'll be helpful. Rare Friday night game, I think, for the Islanders too. But it's these two games against the Penguins that are the real standouts. It is unfathomable to me that we are at the tail end of December and the Islanders haven't seen the Penguins yet this season, which is kind of crazy. They haven't seen the Rangers yet either, but obviously they got a big outdoor game against them coming up. So I guess that kind of makes sense, but this is a little bit ridiculous. The Penguins, as I'm sure all of you listening know, have not had a great season and in fact are quite a bit behind the Islanders right now. And I know this is setting me up for a great deal of disappointment, but I have to be honest, and I have to say that I want the Islanders to absolutely obliterate the Penguins in both of these games. And I don't mean necessarily in the score. They did lose, what was it, 7-0 to the Leafs the other day. Doesn't need to be kind of a thing like that. I just want the Islanders to win so convincingly and so thoroughly and dismantle them and demoralize them so completely that these are, if not the first, at least a significant series of nails in the coffin of the Penguins for this season. Imagine the Islanders going into Pittsburgh on New Year's Eve and beating the Penguins, say, 4-1, right? Or 5-2. Something very normal, and the Penguins not really getting a sniff of anything, and the Islanders just sort of whistling their way out of PPG Paints Arena on their way back to their families for New Year's Eve, although I guess they're on their way to Colorado, so they're probably getting on a plane or something. But that, meanwhile, the Penguins would have to cope with the idea that the first, you know, 3 months of the Dubas Carlson era is as sub-mediocre as it has been. I think that would be just absolutely delicious. So I, once again, I mean, they just did it this week in tough situations. They picked up 5 out of 6 points. I would love to see them to get 6 out of 6 points right here. You know, maybe again, you go to overtime against the Caps or something like that. But I see this as a huge, huge, huge opportunity for the Islanders to make a lot of space between them and some of the other teams in the Metro. Maybe get a little bit closer to the Rangers if they're lucky and the Rangers kind of stumble here a bit. But more importantly, just absolutely collapse the Penguins. Just make them cry, make them go home and be like, oh man, what are we doing? And then have to start asking themselves some hard questions. When you look at these three games coming up, what do you see? And I mean, I know you're hoping for the same thing I am, but I mean, what do you kind of see coming out of these three games here, two again against these the flightless foul?
Yeah. What an opportunity
right
this is, right? Like, as I said right at the end there, the Islanders are 7 points clear of the Penguins. They played one more game than Pittsburgh right now, but even so, they're 7 points clear of Pittsburgh, and they have an opportunity to just put them in the rearview mirror for quite a while here if they they don't allow the Penguins to pick up even a point. Just, and it would just be so sweet because of the way that the Penguins have their offseason was treated compared to what the Islanders did, because of the difference in age and thick framed glasses that the general managers have been aware, and that even though their previous jobs were both with the same team. And it would be so sweet. You look at both of these teams have a 3-game week where the Islanders, where they're each other's opponents for 2 out of 3. The Penguins have that Sunday game is the second night of a back-to-back for Pittsburgh, but they're home for both games. They play the Blues right before. Like, if the Penguins can just absolutely stink up the joint here this week, and the Islanders can do the opposite. Oh man. Like, I know it goes against every fiber of our being as a podcast to think about these things, but it's really hard not to right now, because it's so nicely poised for the Islanders to really put a stamp on 2023 as a year, with a couple wins against Pittsburgh to close it out and to make them be the team that's asking themselves some existential questions rather than it being the other way around. And like, the more and more I think about it, like the more and more I'm getting used to the fact that I need to stop fearing teams with players like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby and stuff, because the genesis of that fear for so long was, well, the Islanders just don't have the good players to skate with them. They need to be in survival mode. Where now with Horvat and Barzal in that top line and then the Nelson line right behind them, like, the Islanders do. They have,
right,
when Sidney Crosby comes out on the ice, the Islanders can send out Bo Horvat and Matt Barzal, and that is really good. And then when Evgeny Malkin comes out, then the Islanders can send out Brock Nelson, and that is quite comforting. So it's what a week this could be. And of course the flip side is it could also all go pear-shaped and the Islanders could be in a quite a thick, muddy situation. But yeah, I'm hoping for the best here, and I'm trying not to get ahead of myself, but the January 1st articles that get posted, if it does go our way, about the Penguins and Carlson and their general manager and the crossroads that they'd find themselves at, would just be absolutely glorious. So I'm just really hoping the Islanders can get us there.
Yeah. I think it would also be very funny if a derisive Kyle Dubas chant came out at UBS Arena during that Penguins Islanders game, just to make sure that everybody knew that, yes, we know who you are, we know what you did, and we know that you suck. Would be a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I mean, these are huge. And I mean, to the point where I don't know, like, what the players are thinking. You know, that might mean a little bit of a letdown against the Caps, but again, they just played the Caps, so I can't imagine that they would. But you know, it's very rare for us to come away looking at a trio of games and being like, man, they can get all 6 points here. But I'm looking at this week and I'm seeing a way for the Islanders to get all 6 points. And, you know, hey, you drop one against maybe the Caps or something, that'd probably be okay. I wouldn't like it, but, you know, in reality, you know, these teams are going to fight back. But if they can get all 6 points, you're talking about, you know, creating quite a cushion. And, you know, you're looking at the Islanders, you know, standings right now. So the Rangers 23-8-1, 47 points. The Islanders in second place 16-8-9, an insane record, but they have 41 points. And then the Flyers are 18-11-4 for 40 points. And then the Caps are in the first wild card. They're 17-9-5 with 39 points, so just 1 point behind the Flyers. And then the Lightning 17-13-5 with also 39 points. And then the Hurricanes have 38, the Devils have 36, Red Wings have 36, although they had lost, you know, 4 or 5 in a row. Even the Habs are still hanging around 35, and the Penguins are behind them with 34. So, I mean, the only two teams that are out of it right now are Ottawa and Columbus, but I mean, there's still plenty of time. Everybody's got the Senators have a ton of games on everybody because they came back from Sweden and didn't play for another week and a half. But they're basically cooked right now. Jacques Martin is in charge. Former Islander DJ Smith is showing the door. I'm begging somebody to hire Jack Capuano as a coach. Come on. What are we doing here? Well, you got to bring back 70-something-year-old Jacques Martin. You can't just let Jack run the rest of the bench for the rest of the year. Come on. That's a slap in the face. But and then in the Atlantic Division, the Bruins are atop in 44, and then the Leafs and Panthers each have 40. A lot has been made about the Islanders' number of overtime losses, which is 9, which is quite a bit, and it's the most in the league, obviously. And, you know, the Kraken also have 9 as well, but they're well out of the playoff picture. We'll be seeing them soon too. But people aren't looking at the fact that the Islanders have only 8 regulation losses, which is among the least in the league. I mean, the Bruins have 7, and the Rangers, Leafs, and Stars, they all have 8. The Kings also have only 7. So, I mean, the Islanders have lost the second least regulation games in the league. And, you know, yeah, okay, fine, they only have 16 regulation wins, but I mean, they've been picking up points, like we've been saying this whole time. So this is a team that has deserved to be here, regardless of the way people want to make it seem like, oh, now we're starting to hear they got to change the standings now, because you can't let a team like this in the playoffs with all these loser points. Just shut up. I really just hate these people. I can't take it anymore. But, you know, when you look at their place in the standings, they haven't really lost all that much. You know, they've got 12 regulation wins, which, again, is the same as the Flyers. It's more than the Caps. It's more than the Leafs. These are good numbers. Like, this is a good team. And so they can show the world again by beating the Penguins, who people thought was going to be a good team earlier this year, and gets a lot of attention, and then separating themselves. And again, if the Rangers stumble, all of a sudden you're coming into the new year, what, maybe 3 or 4 points out of first place? That's crazy. I mean, there's a scenario. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, and God only knows this is probably not going to happen, but like, there's a scenario in which these two teams play at MetLife Stadium in February with first place in the Metro on the line. Like, that would be insane. That would be an insane statement. But right now, that's a distinct possibility. Yeah. It could possibly happen. And a lot of people will be eating their words, and they're going to be complaining about overtime losses, whatever. But the Islanders have earned this. Like, they've made it here for a reason. And beating the Penguins would be very helpful. And I think kind of get that point across a little bit better, too.
Yeah. The overtime losses conversation.
Right.
I was not ready for that to become a thing here. I thought right. After 20 something years of the loser Seriously. Point, we right. kind of just accepted that it's part of the league right now until it changes. It's not just complaining about it doesn't mean the league is going to have a board of governors meeting in Boca Raton and say, okay, are you going to really let the Islanders get away with this? That's not how it's just empty calorie complaining. And right. It's become this narrative where people think these teams are playing for overtime. The Islanders are going to overtime so much because they are blowing leads in the last 5 minutes of games. Right. They're not going into the third period up 4-2 on the Hurricanes or the Red Wings saying, or the Devils or the Bruins or whatever, and saying, let's get this one overtime, guys. We're up 4-2. You and me, you know, we always joke in our group chat, like the Islanders will be up 3-1 with, you know, 20 minutes left in a game. And I'll just be like, just get a point. And it's tongue in cheek. And the Islanders aren't doing that. They're not coming out thinking, all right, let's blow this two. We can blow this lead, but as long as we get it to overtime, we're going to be okay. So there's that is some very important context to this conversation, that these people are just looking at the third column and can't really cope with this weird looking record that the Islanders have, and being like, oh, well, how are the Islanders in second place in the Metro? Oh, it's because they have 9 loser points. Yeah, we wish we had less loser points and more winners points, because that we've been blowing leads. It hasn't been 1-1 every game and the Islanders just parking the bus. It's been right. a very different story. We've been watching, Robert Bortuzzo or Sam Bolduc take penalties and turn pucks over. Grant Hutton played a few minutes here and there. Like, this is not, it's not been a straightforward season, because it never is. It's the NHL. Weird things happen. And the other context that's really important to point out here is the Islanders are one of three teams in the NHL, to have played 13 overtime games. One of them is the Leafs and the other one is the Montreal Canadiens. If we all operate under the assumption that overtime more or less is a crapshoot and the shootout is even more so, like you can probably make a pretty fair argument there that once the game gets past regulation, it's anybody's guess who's going to win. I think some teams are more set up, are set up better to win 3-on-3 than others. But the only difference here is the Islanders have had a couple shootout goals go in and against them. Like David Pastrnak scored a shootout goal after the Islanders had tied it up, and or else this record 17-8-8 and the Kraken game too. That shootout, like the Islanders, that shootout was nuts. The Islanders come out ahead on that right. Coin flip. Okay, we're 18-8-7, and you can just look at it that way and say, yeah, they've just had some poor performances in shootouts and bad luck in overtime or whatever, however you want to look at it. And if you flip it the other way, if the Leafs have 9 overtime losses out of their 13 games, like, are we having the same conversation? Absolutely not.
Right.
The Canadiens, no, they'd be getting a lot of credit because they're this young upstart team. Man, they're doing a great job just picking up points here.
Right.
Whereas the Islanders, that's what they're doing. That's what they have to do here. They need to pick up points, beg, borrow, and steal to pick up points, because once again, they are playing Robert Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc and Mike Riley and an offhanded Sebastian Aho
right.
every game right now. Adam Pellick, Ryan Pulak, Scott Mayfield, all three of them are out at the same time, the same time. And they've been out at the same time for weeks now. Like, this is not going to look pretty. It's not going to look pretty. And I hear people, I'm kind of concerned about their record and their record being inflated by the shootout. Their record isn't inflated by the shootout. Their record is deflated because they are playing Robert Bortuzzo and Sam Bolduc and Sebastian Aho and Mike Riley.
Right.
Like, this is insane to me that nobody's picking up that this team is grinding its way to these kind of heartwarming points. Rather, right. This has been a theme on our show a couple times since July 1st, 2018, that the Islanders are an underdog. Like, they are just, their kind of place in the league right now puts them as an underdog. Their big brother is in first place and is getting you know, heaps of praise about for their start. And so just naturally they're in an underdog spot.
Hmm.
And this season, everybody was very skeptical about them going into the year. That makes them, okay, this is an underdog. This is a team that was on the fringes of the playoff picture projected to be on the fringes of the playoff picture coming into the season. They are an underdog. They are defying expectations. And when you're an underdog, you defy expectations by doing it any way you can. Like that's what your ethos, that's what your philosophy has to be. And they're doing that. And they're, instead of getting credit for it, everyone's just like, are they cheating?
Right.
Yeah.
Should we change the rules? Should we completely change how the league operates? It's funny that you mentioned the Leafs and Canadians, because this whole thing reminds me of something. Do you remember, like, during the early days of hockey Twitter, there was like a hashtag movement that said that the Leafs are actually good? Do you remember this?
Yes.
Okay. So the theory at the time, and this was during the sort of Randy Carlyle, Phil Kessel era, was, and I might be wrong about this, but as far as I remember, the idea was that, yes, the Leafs get outshot all the time, and no, they don't push play. This was back when we were just learning about puck possession, Corsi, people realizing, oh shit, the team that takes all the shots and gets all the shot attempts ends up winning the cup all the time. And so it was like, no, the Leafs don't do all these things that we have come to associate with winning teams, but they are getting points. They're keeping their head above water in the division. They look like they're going to make the playoffs. They are actually a good team in spite of their numbers that keep saying that they are not. Of course, spoiler alert, turns out the Leafs ended up being a pretty mediocre team, losing in the playoffs in the first round all the time. The Islanders, of course, do not get that luxury. There are no hashtag the Islanders are actually good. Like, we don't have this sort of, you know, cadre of bloggers and writers that are out here trying to like make this a thing and make people believe, no, this team is actually really good in spite of some numbers that may or may not seem all that great. And I just find that to be kind of a funny thing. Like, nobody's out here, again, hashtag the Isles are actually good. Like, they wouldn't do that, even though we know that they are good. And we've been saying this whole time. Yes, we've been on their ass about the blowing of the leads. Yes, we did an emergency podcast after blowing that lead against the Sharks in one of the most egregious, you know, wet farts we've seen in a long time. But we keep getting back to the point that, like, what makes it so frustrating is we know this team is good. Like, these guys are good. They're good. That's a good team. And we've seen them play better. And we know that they know what they need to do to win. And again, they are playing, as Mike keeps saying, without three of their more important defensemen. And so, you know, if they can tighten, at that point, you'd think that losing those three guys would tighten up the structure. But of course, it hasn't yet. But regardless, this is a good team. You know, they're good. Horvat, Barzal, now with Lee. I mean, Lee's one of the hotter guys in the league right now. They're doing well. That second line has been hot for, you know, they've been great since they put them together. We've got Holmstrom and Pageot now, our deadly duo. And obviously Clutterbuck and Cizikas look great, you know, and Fasching has really helped them. And obviously the goalies are good. So, like, this is a good team. But you're not going to hear that. You're just going to hear about the negative numbers and, oh, you know, they're -4 in goal differential. Well, okay, but the Caps are -9, and yet I don't see anybody complaining that they're in the first wild card spot, right? Like, because they want to see, they're complaining that Ovechkin hasn't scored in 15 games, and, you know, they want him to get the record or something. So it is what it is. What can you do? You know, it's just our friend Arthur Staple had mailbag over at The Athletic, and somebody asked, you know, what do the Islanders have to do to get some kind of credit for what they've done? And Art's answer was as succinct and as humorous as he always is. He said, move to Canada, which I guess is probably the actual answer there. So I just found it funny. I remembered the Leafs are actually good. And it would be nice if somebody was like, hey, the Isles are actually good. And then you would see that those Leafs are actually good people would be like, nah, they're not. Here's why.
Yeah.
Get lost.
it was quite the week on hockey Twitter, because people were resurfacing. Bo Horvat had run his point streak to, what, 11 games, and him and Barzal have just been clicking, and they've scored some beautiful goals, which is the other thing here is, like, we're watching some fun hockey. Like, that goal that the Islanders scored, Horvat scored against the Hurricanes, like, those passes were ridiculous. Cross three different, like, tape-to-tape ice cut the like the rink in half three different times before he scored. And so like that Horvat and Barzal have been playing so well, and people are pointing out that you know, that the Athletic, when the Islanders made that trade, called it a lose-lose, and
yes,
said, like, all the Islanders will still have time to flip him at the deadline, and that everybody gave it like a C plus or worse, C minus and D's for trade grades. And it really became a really refreshing reminder about how little that stuff matters. The draft grades, the trade grades, the contract grades. Johnny Gaudreau has the fifth best contract in the NHL by by the Athletics model. Like this stuff is so useless.
Right. Yeah.
This trade has kind of become a poster boy for that.
Yeah.
Reminder. And the purveyor of said opinions and charts had a little bit of like a hissy fit about being called out for being wrong. And his had a couple people come to his defense, and somebody was like, "Oh man, so you're Dom wrong," or excuse me, said like, "Oh yeah, man, like you're not wrong for, or you're crazy one for saying a team with the 28th best expected goal situation in all hockey is not a contender," like trying to build this defense about
right
numbers that don't matter to,
yeah,
you know, that there's no column in the standings once right. again here. And just watching it all unfold just drives you to the point of just wondering how we got here.
Yeah.
Where you just like, there's a guy wearing a helmet and pillows on one. I see both of them. They don't exist, though, I'm being told. They don't count. The third column in the standings doesn't matter. All right. That matters is here on this chart and one or two or three people's opinions. It's mind-numbing stuff.
Yeah.
And this team doing well makes these people so mad that it becomes even sweeter.
Right.
And Horvat doing well and just fitting in perfectly with his kids and his Christmas and building his toys after the Hurricanes game and all that stuff. Like it all just working out so well for this team. It's just been so nice. Because that, like, oh man, you got me. You pointed out that the Islanders, a team that is playing Robert Bortuzzo and Mike Riley and Sebastian Aho and Sam Bolduc, doesn't have the best statistical portfolio. Right. You got us, man. Here, we're going to hand back 15 points.
Right.
Disperse them amongst the rest of the league as you wish.
Right.
Oh my God.
They have the 28th existence. Yeah, it is tiring. It is exhausting. It has to be exhausting for them. Like, yeah, okay, fine. The Islanders have the 28th best expected goal differential. Okay, fine. But they're also 11-2-4 in their last 17 games. Like, that's a real number.
Them win. I don't know what keeps happening. They keep winning despite that.
Right. Yeah. It's insane. It's completely insane. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I did want to say, and I just, you know, people are free to do whatever they want with their time and on their social media. But like, I don't know why you would spend your Christmas break or your holiday break like arguing with these people, replying to them and getting into arguments with them. Like, nothing you say is ever going to change their mind. Like, no reply or no dunk or no meme or whatever is ever going to make any of these people ever stop and be like, you know what? You're right. The Islanders do deserve some credit here. They're never going to say that, because that's not what they do. They don't care. Like, they just don't care. They're never going to care. They're never going to get it. They're never going to give this team an ounce of due. Like, if the Islanders won the Stanley Cup this year, you're never going to get Dom being like, yeah, well, I guess my model's wrong. I guess I'm going to have to change the whole thing because the Islanders won. Like, it's never going to happen. You're never going to get Scott Wheeler to be like, huh, I guess maybe they didn't have, you know, maybe having the 32nd best prospect pool in the league didn't end up hurting the Islanders all that much. They don't care. They do not care about the Islanders, about you, about me, about us, about any of our replies or our dunks. They simply don't care. It's never going to work out for them. They are just, they're just shit eating children. That's what they are. And you know, there are children that have a better grasp of reality and you know, empathy and their own place in the world than these people. They just don't care. And they're never going to care. So I just don't know why you would waste your time arguing with these folks, because you're never going to win with them. Like, and then, because even if you do make a point that makes sense, they're not going to, you know, they're going to have a bunch of people in their replies going, you drop this king, you got him, you tell him, like, come on, just it's, and to Mike's point, like, how did we get here? We got here because people make this stuff important while forgetting about what these guys are actually playing for. And it's, I'm not the first person to say it. No player in the NHL cares about their Corsi 4. Like, they just don't, you know, they're out here trying to survive a game, maybe score a goal and help their team win. They don't care that they've got a 38% Corsi in this game. They just don't, they don't think about it that way. And why we do, I don't understand. So anyway, all right, that's enough of that. we're going to close it up here. We are going to come back on January 1st for a quick one. We're going to just talk about the games that were and then look ahead to the games that are coming up in Colorado, Arizona, and Vegas. So that'll be a lot of fun. But please have a happy new year, a festive new year. Be safe. But we'll be back on that January 1st day to talk about the next couple games coming up and then the ones that will just pass. Hopefully those Penguins game came to pass exactly as we hoped they would. If in case you missed it before Christmas, we put out a great episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast with our friend Travis Flynn, otherwise known as North Dakota Red Eagle. Y'all know him from Lighthouse Hockey. It's fantastic. It's about Cliff Ronning and a friend of his who took in his first ever NHL game with Ronning against the Canucks. And it was fantastic. And you definitely should listen to it. I thought it was perfect for the holidays. So if you missed it because you were busy, go back and check it out. That came out on the 22nd. And then this week is a packed one for us because we're not only doing this episode, but we have a Country Club Atmosphere that we're going to record in a few minutes coming out on Thursday. And then My Islanders Book Club coming out on Friday about a book that a lot of people have read and a lot of people have asked for. So I'm hoping to get that out there. It's actually two books, a little bit of a year-end bonus there too. So check those out. And as I said off the top, if you sign up for the Country Club tier at patreon.com/islandersanxiety before the 31st of December, you will be eligible for a Islanders Anxiety Club iron-on patch once those start shipping in the next month or so. If you wait until January 1st, the deal's off. Because once January 1st rolls around, those patches go away. So get to patreon.com/islandersanxiety, sign up for the Country Club tier, and get a patch. Okay, I guess that's about it. Follow us on Twitter at Islands Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp on Spotify as well. Relighthouse Hockey every single day. Another fantastic year for the crew over there. Putting in some great work, even on the holidays. Really always appreciate it. It's always very funny. So take a look. Relighthouse Hockey every single day. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Find out more at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Try wines in the Pinot Project, especially for New Year's Eve. They make a lovely New Year's Eve wine. And Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. We are in the throes, the deep throes of the English Premier League. Get all your soccer fix from Wonder Goal, his soccer podcast. Any final thoughts on the 5-point week that was or the potential 6-point week coming up? Now that I just jinxed it, of course. Let's pretend that I didn't say that. But yeah, any final thoughts going into this big stretch of games here?
No, it was a perfect kind of time for a break. For this team because they sent you into the break feeling happy and mm-hmm. that means they're going to walk out of the break thinking about what could be and that sets us up for what will likely be bitter disappointment and we'll get back to our regular scheduled anxiety on New Year's Day. What better day to do that, right? So thank you for sticking with us all year and listening through our petulant rants about overtime losses and blobs and trade grades and the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Ford Performance Center and all that kind of stuff. So very thankful for all the people who have been listening through 2023, which it's been the year of Bo Horvat, and so who knows what 2024 is going to bring. So we'll see, I guess, on New Year's Day. And I'm excited for this week and see where we're at when we talk on to ring in 2024.
Yeah. What a turnaround. Being very excited to coming into the last week of the year. Very excited about these three games and what we see on the other side. But here we are, and we thank you. We thank the Islanders, and we'll be back again on January 1st with our next episode. Have a great New Year. Have a happy Kwanzaa. Hope you had a great Christmas, and we'll talk to you again soon. All right, bye-bye.